and the delivery. There is this story about the high-powered Chicago attorney that goes to Texas and is out dove hunting, actually. I don't know how your feelings are about dove hunting, but he went to Texas to hunt doves, shot a dove, and it went over the fence. And there it was lying, just over the fence. But the Texan rancher was out there in that particular pasture at that point. And so this high-powered Chicago attorney looks at the rancher, looks at his dove, looks at the rancher, looks at the dove, and decides to go get it. Starts climbing the fence, and the rancher yells over there, "Hey, what you doing?" "I'm getting my dove." "Can't do that. It's private land." "Well, if you don't let me get my dove, I'll sue you." "Well, that's not how we settle things in Texas," he says. "Oh, yeah? How is that?" "Well," he says, "in Texas, we do the three-kick test. We take turns kicking each other three times, and the first one that quits, gives up, loses." High-powered attorney thought, "Well, that can't be too rough, okay." So he climbs over the fence, and the Texan with his pointy cowboy boots gives him a whack on the shin, and there is a sharp pain. And then kicks him again, and he falls down. Kicks him again, and he falls down. Now this high-powered Chicago attorney gets up off the ground just hurting like mad, but decides, "Okay, I'm ready," he said. "My turn. Now I give up," the Texan said. "You can have the dove." Well, we've got kind of that kind of a contest going on here between Pharaoh and Moses, or we could say between God and the gods of Egypt. And they are having this kicking contest. Neither one will give up easily. And there has to be some kind of a high power come in and interrupt what's going on. And God does just that. He interrupts what's going on. They say it's about 430 years of slavery total that the Israelites were in Egypt. Of course, it got worse and worse and worse as they got farther and farther from the memory of Joseph. It's important to have a memory. It's important to remember where we were of the Israelites. He was afraid of their power. And so we've covered either in your reading or just briefly up here that they had a solution for that. Let's just kill the firstborn males. Now, that is not a surprise to God, who told Abram in Genesis 15, "Your descendants will be strangers in a foreign land. They will be slaves there. They will be treated cruelly for 400 years, but I will punish the nation that enslaves them, and when they leave that foreign land, they will take great wealth with them." That was in Genesis, the 15th chapter. And so this is not a surprise, and it's, you could say, going according to the plan. God says to Moses, "You're the one." Now, you and I with Moses, we've said numerous times, you've got the wrong number, God. Find somebody else. There's somebody better than I. There's somebody more capable than I. I remember when I was new in a small church up in north central Iowa, and we had cluster, and one of the pastors of the largest church in that cluster group, was getting ribbed about having, "Oh, you've got so much money, you've got so many people, you don't have any, you don't know what it's like." And he said, and he just got furious. And his name was Chuck Wallace, just a fantastic pastor. But anyway, he said, "You have no idea. You might have somebody say, 'No, get so-and-so. They would be better at that position than I would.' But I've got 5 to 10 people saying, 'No, get them. They would be much better than I.'" And he said, "You might be short this many dollars. I'm short this many dollars." And so he said, it's not fun. Moses says, "You've got the wrong number." Well, God says, "No, you're the one, and I can use you." That reminds me of 1 Corinthians, where Paul is writing to the church at Corinth. And he says some things that don't make a lot of sense to you and me in our brains. But he says things like this: "For the message about the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. In other words, the foolishness is the power. And the cross, this sign of weakness, where people die, where they give up, where they end, that's our power. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For since in the wisdom of God the world did not know God through wisdom, God decided through the foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe. Jews demand signs, Greeks desire wisdom. We proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews, foolishness to Gentiles, but to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. For God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. What does that mean? It just means that where we end, God can take over. Where I am strong, I probably spend less time in prayer. Or where I am self-satisfied that I'm strong or I have a strength, I might spend less time in prayer on that than I do in some place that I'm going, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? I've said for 10 years, I've been saying that I didn't do buildings before. I never did buildings before. And I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know, I have any idea what I was getting into when I got here. But maybe that was the strength that God needed, because I couldn't direct it. God had to work it. We were all just willing in God's hands. And so in other areas of life and the life of this church and the witness and the ministries of this church, is it possible where we don't have the answers, that that's where we can be best? That's where we can be most helpful for God's purposes. God equipped Moses for that work. Certainly God can equip us for our work. Now, one of the things that this story, the story of the Passover, reminds us is that that Passover prepares us for this one. That Passover with the blood on the doorposts and then you will be spared. It's an ugly story. It's not one that we like to celebrate, but it's one that we must remember. Because we can understand that there's retribution, that there's costs. We can understand that sin is current and present in the world, and that that somewhere or another there has to be some means to an end, some payment for sin. That there is cost to sin. If we haven't figured that out yet, you're a whole lot better than I. There's a cost to our sinning. And the way to get it all put back together is to give up and say, Lord, make me whole. And so one of the images we might use, and I was tempted to wear a red stole today, but this one has plenty of red in it. But one of the images we might use as we come to this table is, this table reminds us of the blood of the Lamb that is promised to us. Even as the disciples said, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. Even as the Apostle Paul talked about the blood of Christ making us whole. So we come here putting blood on our spirit because Christ has made us whole. And so you are welcome to this table to be made whole and to remember what God has done and what God is doing. Because if there's anything that holds the whole story together, whether it's in a published book by the name The Story, or if it's in the book, what holds the whole thing together is God's persistence in reaching out to humanity, no matter what, to say, I love you. And so we come to this table. God's love reaching out to you and to me. Sometimes even through people like Moses. Who would have thunk it? We'll go to our great Thanksgiving. You know, I do have one story to tell, though. Let's go back to... You've heard us talk about a friend of ours. That's Alex Waters, actually. Well, and I just wanted to let you know that he's running for office. Yeah, I know, we're not supposed to get political in church, right? Well, he's running for county supervisor in Woodbury County. That's in Sioux City. You can't get much farther away, so I think we're safe, okay? But he's running for office, and he's 28 years old, and he feels called to do it. Now, this guy has a lot of ambition, and this sense of call is pretty strong. Now, this is also Alex. When he's speeding around, you notice that his front wheels are off the ground. He can go like mad. When he was about 18 years old is when he broke his neck. He hasn't walked since, never will. But he feels called, and he doesn't consider his limitations. He considers his abilities. He's a lesson for me. He might be for you. That instead of focusing on what I can't do, what I am no longer able to do, what I will never able to do, that instead, what is it? What are the gifts that I have that God can find useful, and can I make those available? And so that's our challenge today, you and me. Instead of thinking about what we can't do, let's think of the possibilities. And now let's go to the great thing.